We are in Matthew chapter 19 for our New Testament lesson, verses 13 through 15. And this is Jesus blessing the little children. Then little children were brought to him that he might put his hands on them and pray, but the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me, and do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." And he laid his hands on them and departed from there. May the Lord bless this word to our hearts and minds this morning. Well, this morning I want to look at five stages of parenting. First, I want to get started with something a little humorous. I heard about this little boy who went to his father one Saturday and asked if he could go play baseball with his friends. And his father looked at his son and said, "Sure, son, you can go play baseball, but under no circumstances are you to go swimming in the canal." Little boy said, "Sure, Dad, no problem." And so went out, came back a few hours later, walked into the kitchen. He was soaking wet. The father looked at his little son and said, "Son, I thought I told you specifically to not go swimming in the canal." The little boy said, "Well, Dad, I just couldn't resist going swimming in the canal." And the father looked at him again and said, "Why did you do it, son?" The boy said again, "Well, Dad, I just couldn't resist it." And the father looked at the son and said, "Well, son, if you weren't supposed to go swimming in the canal, why did you take your swimming suit with you?" The little boy said, "Well, Dad, I thought you'd at least be happy that I was prepared just in case I got tempted." You know, parenting can be frustrating and in trial, and it's also one of the greatest joys in all of life. And people have often come to me and said, "I wish there was more in the Bible on parenting." And after all, if you think about it for a moment, a lot of what's in the Bible is not the best sort of modeling for parenting. I mean, it starts right in Genesis, right? We have Adam and Eve, the first parents, and they've got Cain and Abel, and it's the first case of sibling rivalry. And it ends in one killing the other. Talk about jealousy and sibling rivalry. And then if you think for a moment about Jacob with his sons, right? And Jacob wasn't the perfect father, because what does he do? He favors Joseph, gives him this beautiful coat in front of all of his other brothers, and what do his brothers do? They're so jealous, they throw him in a pit and end up selling him into slavery. Of course, God does great things even from that, but the truth is there's a lot of difficulty in finding the right models for parenting. And people have come to me sometimes and said, "Well, if there was just a book on parenting in the Bible," and I said, "Well, you know, there is a book on parenting in the Bible." And they said, "Well, what's that?" I said, "It's the book of Proverbs." But even that makes it difficult because Proverbs has these bits of wisdom along the way. And it actually begins with a father imparting wisdom to his son, and it ends with a mother imparting wisdom to her son, who will be a king. And so it's interesting, but still, it's difficult. And so this morning I'd like to share what I've learned a little bit in five stages of parenting. And, you know, I'm right in the middle of this. So Savannah, my daughter, is 15. She'll be 16 later this month. And so I approach it with fear and trepidation. I'm certainly not a perfect father, but I've learned some things along the way. Any people out there that are home improvement folks, do-it-yourself folks out there, you do projects on the weekends or maybe even during the week in the evening sometime, and we kind of like to do that. And it's true in our relationships, too. And so people have come to me and say, "You know, we'd like some how-to kind of messages." And so I thought I'd do some of these sermons on home improvement. And so this is home improvement on parenting and some things that I've learned about parenting along the way. And these are five stages. And I've culled everywhere from Piaget and Erickson to Andy Stanley and Rick Warren to do my best here, okay? Take what you will and learn, and I know you've got great lessons too. And so if we sort of dive in on five stages of parenting, and the first stage of parenting is love, and that's from ages 0 to 2. And when you think about it, the truth is the foundation of parenting is love, agape love, unconditional love. In fact, it's so important that I've heard psychologists say more than one that in the first 2 years of a child's life, it's like they have a love tank. And the love that you pour into their love tank is the love they will be able to pour out in relationships with others and with God. That's how important it is. Now, you might disagree with that, but I will tell you that the first 2 years of a child's life are fundamental, and the most fundamental relationship is love. And it could be a grandparent or a parent, a significant adult. In fact, There's been studies done by psychologists in why infants fail to thrive. And when they're like orphaned and they're in an institution, they found out that if nurses spend time holding and caring for the child, the ability to thrive goes up exponentially. And so we want to tell our kids that we love them even before they understand what love is. We want to hold them. In fact, when you look at this story of Jesus, I think it's really fundamental because these parents were bringing their kids to Jesus at a young age and they wanted Jesus to bless them. The disciples thought Jesus was too busy and they were pushing back the parents and the kids. And Jesus said, no, no. He rebuked the disciples and invited the parents to bring the children. Jesus took time and he put his hands on them and blessed them and prayed for them and then allowed them to go on our way. And I think in the same way, you and I, we need to bless our kids. We need to tell them that we love them. And that's how we start in life. And this verse from Proverbs that says, train your children the right way, and when they're old, they won't stray from that. Starting out right is so fundamental and important in all of life. When I was just a new father, my brother came to visit, and he said, you know, I'm going to buy you a chair, a dad's chair. And so he bought me one of those leather recliners, and he said, you need this. You're busy, and you need to just hold your daughter. And, you know, it was really true. I still have that chair, and I had a little bit of duct tape I had to put on it because it means so much to me. But, you know, this time that Savannah and I have spent in the chair, when she was just in my arms and, you know, watching TV or reading a book or whatever, is so important. And so some of the phases of parenting come and go, but the love phase and stage never, ever goes out. It's fundamental and a foundation to all the other parts of life. It's the first thing I say to my daughter in the beginning of the day, and it's the last thing I say to her every night, even to this day. So love is 0 to 2 and continues beyond that. The second stage is discipline, and that's ages 2 to 5. And in the discipline stage, we teach kids how to interact and what to do in life. How to be accepted in the family and how to be accepted out in public and behaving. And it's really important that they understand that. And it's important that, you know, we shape them in discipline. I know different parents, different things about discipline. With Savannah, we've never used physical kind of punishment. For us, it's just scolding. I know it's different for different parents. That's just the way she is, the kind of person that she is. But what I'll say is that it's not just important to tell kids when they're doing something wrong. It's even more important to tell kids when they're doing something right. If the only time they ever hear from us is when they're doing something wrong, how are they going to get attention? They're going to do something wrong. Okay, so it's important, even more important, that we tell them when they're doing something right and we praise them. And that becomes sort of the impetus, the stimulus for growth and their patterns of behavior. And this is also a time when we share faith stories in the Bible. The Bible stories that become fundamental, particularly the stories about Jesus. And they can begin to hear those stories and allow that shape in their hearts and lives. And it's also a time when we start with habits and values. We pray before meals. We begin to instill prayer and devotions in all of our life. It says in Proverbs 29:17, discipline your children and they will bring you peace and delight. Discipline, you know, discipline is the root of disciple. And so our faith stories are important in our children. Now, it's important that we don't just tell them these things, but it's important that you and I model them. Even from ages 2 to 5, they're not just hearing what we say. They're watching what we do, right? And so someone once said about life and sharing our faith, preach every day, speak only when necessary. The truth is, with our kids too, we do need to speak, but we also need to model. We're not perfect, but it's important that if we make a mistake, we're willing to share that with kids. And it's important that we take time with our kids. That's so important. And I'm sure that you're like me, busy many evenings. I'm busy. And I recall that when I was at University Church some time ago, I was one of the main repair people for the church facility as well, as long as these like World War II boilers. I felt like I was like in a World War II sub sometimes there. Pipes that were bursting and all kinds of things. And so one of the people that used to come over as a contractor, his name is Robert. And Robert was our electrician. He was a part-time electrician. He did a great job, did it at a great price. And Robert and I became friends. He used to bring his son, Jackson, who was at that time this high. And at one point, Robert said to me, he said, you know, the insurance is getting too expensive. And I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, well, I'm going to give up doing the electricity thing. And I said, well, what are you going to do with your time? He said, well, I decided what I'm going to do is going to buy a boat and I'm going to take my son fishing. And I thought, that's a pretty good answer. And then later on, when I had Savannah and she was young and busy all the time, and even when I was doing this fixer-upper house that was my first house that I owned, I had a friend by the name of Ron Fosnaw. You may know Captain Ron, who was a police officer from Purdue Police for a long time. And he looked at me and said, you know, you're really just too busy. You need to just slow it down because it's going to go faster than you think. And I said, well, you know, what decision do you have? He said, well, for us, it was boating. We bought a boat and we'd go out, you know, and get away from the house and just my son and I, we'd be in the boat. And I thought, well, that's good advice. And so I looked on the internet for a couple months and I found this great deal on a boat and scrunched together a loan and went and got that boat, needed a little bit of work and fixed it up. And Savannah and I spent a lot of time on there. And later on, we got a different boat. It was a little bit better. But we found that time that we spent, because I couldn't be, you know, cleaning the house and doing these other kinds of things that always needed to be done, we just spent time together and relaxed. And as a matter of fact, later in life, when I had to sell it, you know, financially, we just couldn't have the boat anymore. And so she was so upset. I promised her that that we'd buy a boat again someday. And then she one time she said, well, Dad, we need to get another boat. And that was easy. But then one day she said, Dad, you sold my childhood. That was a really good line. We ended up getting another boat, which we ended up getting another fixer-upper. But, you know, it was really true that we spent a lot of quality time. And you and I can't go back in time and relive a child's childhood and our time parenting them. And so it's so important that when we discipline a child, that we learn to value the time that we have with them. So love, 0 to 2, and discipline, 2 to 5, and then training is 5 to 12. Now, the difference between training and discipline is that we not only tell kids what they need to do and how they need to act, but we begin to tell them why. Why? And I know that's hard for a lot of parents because sometimes we're busy and we're frustrated, and maybe we are busy, but we need to do our best saying why, because it's really easy to say just because I said so. But, you know, kids do need to know why they need to behave that way. And so to try to explain why. And in so doing, too, we also want to sort of teach them stories of faith, but now we begin to add the practical teaching. You know, how do you act this out? How do you live this story out? How do you live out love and service and those key core values? And then to have core values for our home, we have ours on the refrigerator. But once again, the more important thing is not what you have on a refrigerator, but how you live day to day. When you make a mistake, to be able to say, listen, I made a mistake. And Ephesians 6:4 says, fathers, do not frustrate your children, but bring them up in the way and the training and instruction of the Lord. I don't know why it says fathers, right? But fathers. I think because we're really busy in life, and sometimes we just want to cram it all into 10 minutes. You know, this is what you need to do, and here's all the things that you need to do. And fathers are worse. I think mothers are kind of getting that way, too, because mothers now are, you know, they're in the career world and at home, and we're all busy, right? Got two parents working now. Sometimes two jobs apiece, and so we're in a hurry. But we don't want to frustrate our kids. We want to tell them why, and we want to tell them when we're wrong sometimes. And Savannah and I, when she was in roughly first grade, we went to Indiana Beach, one of the places that we spent time together, and she decided she was too big for the kids' rides, you know, the kid, which, and I said, well, I love the kids' ride. You know, I love, you know, watching in the little planes. And she said, Dad, I want to go out there and ride some of those rides that I'm tall enough for now. And so I said, what ride do you want to ride? And so we walked down the midway, and there's this ride called the Paratrooper, I guess it is, or something like that. And it's these umbrella seats, and then it's in a giant wheel, and then it goes up over the water there. And so she said, Dad, I'm tall enough, look. And I said, and I'm very overprotective because as a pastor, I've also been not just a pastor, but a chaplain for the police and fire department. And so I know everything that can go wrong with anything. So, you know, I've been overprotective and I know that. And so I said, well, all right, well, go ahead and do that. And so got her into this chair and then, you know, the metal piece came over and there's no strap that, you know, kind of additional safety there. And so I asked the gal who was running the ride, I said, well, there's no strap here. And she said, oh, you know, that's fine. She's tall enough, yep. Okay, so, and I just thought, wow, you know, and so the ride started to go around, and it got up about halfway, and it was spinning at not quite full speed, and I could see my daughter, because I was just glued there. I could see the fear on her face, and I could see that she was slipping, because she's quite petite. She was tall enough, but she was not heavy or wide enough, and she was sliding out the seat between this metal piece and the seat, and, you know, that was nothing but disaster. And so I looked, and I went like, we're done. And I was like only 2 feet away from the ride operator, and I said, shut it down. I want my daughter out of there. And she said, now? And I said, right now. And I could even see as it was slowing down, I was kind of figuring out where she'd go in the water if she went out. And when I went to get her, she didn't have any question why I stopped the ride. And she was absolutely afraid. And we're still emotional today, both of us, when we think about it, because she knows that that was the right decision. And I didn't need to say much about why, but I did say, listen, I think I was wrong on that one. And she said, yeah, Dad. So, you know, it's important to tell our kids why. It is important to tell them even when we do something wrong and we fall short, whatever that is. I don't know that it was wrong, but it was a wrong decision, but it was the right decision to step in there. Happy to this day, because I believe the worst would have happened there. And so we train them from 5 to 12. We try to pour in the why. We try to pour in the core values of our life and the practical applications of the teaching of Jesus. And we try to teach them about our church family, right? And to be part of the church family and how important that is. And there's things that we do, too. She gets an allowance for doing chores. I still believe in chores. And then she's supposed to take 10% of that and put it in the offering and a little bit of money in savings. And we try to model that too. But those habits and values that we instill in kids and we try to explain why is so important. So we've got love from 0 to 2 and discipline from 2 to 5. Training from 5 to 12, we're really putting in the why. And then somewhere around 12 to 18, it turns to coaching. Now, what's the difference with coaching? Well, you know, coaching is we are like the coach, and we want them to use their gifts and talents in the very best way possible. By now, we should have instilled the why. They're still going to ask us some things. But one of the things to think about is that we don't want them to be us. We want them to be them, the very best them that they are. They have unique gifts and talents that are different from us. We want them to share our core values and our faith, but we want them to be uniquely who they are. Savannah does not have the same gifts and talents that I do. And she has some gifts and talents that I do not have. She's very artistic and some other kinds of gifts and talents that are really, really important. And if you think about a coach for a moment, what does a coach do? A coach sometimes says to a person, I think you're a better wide receiver than a quarterback. Or, you know, you're probably not so much a forward as you are the guard. But the guard is like the quarterback for the basketball team. And then they ask, can we help you? And we say, yeah, we want to be better. And so they teach us some skills and they coach us on how to apply it. And then as they coach, they try to get us more and more independent, right? And so if you look at some of the fundamental great sports coaching movies of all time, which is Hoosiers, right, okay, and then remember the Titans, right? And so the coach comes in and he has this discipline moment and this training moment. In fact, he puts the basketball team out there minus one player, and then he builds up their team, and then what does he do? He makes them more and more independent. In fact, in both movies and in both stories, the winning play came from where? Came from the players. Because the coach had trained them and disciplined them and made them independent and made their skills so good and their perception so good that they were ready for that moment. And that's the way it is with you and I as parents, that we need to do that with our kids. There's a great scripture verse, Deuteronomy 6:6-9, and it basically says this, that you're to teach your kids along the way of life, a little here and a little there. Put your values and my laws and commands on the doorposts, on the sides of your door frames. Tell your kids about it when they go out and when they come in. When you're a coach, it's the little things in life, and you explain little things, and you help them with skills along the way. You can't just take time out all the time. You have to do a little bit here and a little bit there, and you begin to teach them more about the church and the community and our world and what it means to practice love and justice and faith and to love and serve God. And as parents, sometimes it's not easy to discover talents, but it's so important. I don't know if you saw this week, America's Got Talent. Did you see the video up there, Cody Lee? If you haven't, you need to Google that, Cody Lee. So there's this moment, and you have all these judges, and this young man comes out with his mother, who's 22 years old, and they begin to ask him questions, and he's not very good at this, and so the mother shares that he is blind from birth, and he's severely autistic, and so he doesn't have some of the social skills, and he's having trouble even speaking. And the mother shares what she says, well, I discovered at one moment that he was an entertainer. And, you know, Simon, who's the most sarcastic and, you know, distant and disapproving of him, is just kind of scowling a little bit looking at this moment. And so without further ado, they say, well, let's go ahead and let him sing and play. And so he sits, got it over, sat down at the piano, and everybody's kind of looking like, you know, what's going to happen? And all of a sudden he starts to play the piano and sing. And it's just like, oh, you know, and it's just unbelievable. And so he sings this song, and Simon is the first one to stand up and applaud, and the whole place stands up. Everybody's standing up and applauding. And I was thinking, you know, this mother's job was not to make her son like her. The mother's job was to discover who he was and to encourage that. And that's what a coach does. So we want our kids to share our values and our faith and the things that are important in life. But we want them to discover who they are and have them to be the best of who they are in life. And so we become great coaches. And we need to continue to share that time, because that time is going to go so fast. I shared that my daughter had that great line, Dad, you sold my childhood. So we finally, after a number of years, we bought another boat last fall, and it was a fixer-upper, and we fixed it up. And took it out on the lake, enjoyed time together, and she was able to take her girlfriend or two out on the boat, and we drove around and just enjoyed that time together. But you know, that time goes by so quickly, and so as a coach, we need to realize that. We've also, in vacationing, my daughter, a number of years, we used to always go to Florida because that's where my family is, and we only have so much time off, and you don't have weekends off. And so at one point she said, well, listen, Dad, we always go to Florida. I'm kind of tired of Florida. And I said, well, you know, we got family in Florida. She said, well, yeah, well, great. But, you know, I want to go to California. And so, and as I thought about it for a moment, I thought, well, oh my gosh, she's going to graduate pretty soon, right? I can see the end of that. And I just went to Liv's little graduation open house the other day and thought, oh, I can see the end here. And I realized as I was counting it down that I could count on my hand how many more summer vacations we had. And I said, honey, where do you want to go on vacation? She said, well, Dad, I want to go, you know, so it was like California and out west in Canada and maybe overseas. And I said, well, let's start planning this out. And so we said, okay, we're going to go out west. Then we're going to go to Canada. And we were going to go to California, but she decided she wanted to go to New York City with a school choir. And I said, well, we can't do California and New York City in the same year. So we got to go back to Florida. You make the choice. She said, we're going to New York City. So we're going to Florida tomorrow, and then hopefully we'll go to California. But she was part of that decision, but that time's important for us. There's other times, too, and you know, around the family table. It's interesting that we're going to serve communion and share in that around the Lord's table, and that the table is an important part of the family. And that's a symbol of our relationship with Christ and grace and love. And so we'll share in communion shortly, and that Christ came into the world as a baby to share the experience of a family. And so family's so important. The table is so important for us, too. For Savannah, we both like to take drives. And so she'll say, Dad, let's go for a drive. And so then she puts her jams on the music there, and we listen to that. And then after a while, she's ready to talk, and we talk about lots of stuff. I don't know what it is for you, but the time we spend with our family is so important, and hearing what our kids are struggling with, and to be able to coach them and to spend time with them, because they're growing faster than we realize, and we'll always, always treasure that time. So it's love 0 to 2, discipline 2 to 5, training 5 to 12, coaching 12 to 18 plus is the coaching years, and then finally 18 maybe to 21, somewhere in there, it turns to friendship. Friendship, some of you might say. Well, yes, I think that's where, you know, our goal is not to make kids dependent on us. That's codependency. Our goal is to make them independent, to have character, to have values, to have faith, that they can go and live their life, to use their gifts and talents in the place of work, and to be salt and light in our world today. We'll always be parents, but when we use that trump card, I'll always be your parent, I'll always be your mom, I'll always be your dad. If that means I'll always be right, you always have to listen to me, then we're using it wrong. We ought to say we'll always be family. We will always have wisdom that they won't, but if we let them go, then they'll come back to us and ask for moments of wisdom. We want to make them independent. We want to make them strong. We want to make them better who they are as young people, as men and women in our world who will be the kind of people that we ourselves admire, maybe even doing things that we ourselves do not do. But parenting will always be sacred ground. Family will always be sacred ground. Love will always be part of that relationship. When Savannah was a baby, even before she was born, I wrote her a lullaby that I would sing to her every night. And that lullaby, I'm not going to sing it for you because she's better at music than me, was "Dream a little dream, my child. Dream a lullaby. Dream a little dream, my child. You can touch the sky." And I still think about that because I wrote it down. One of the gifts that I have for her is I have a journal that I have kept. I'm actually in volume 4 that she is my gift to her of the days, the experience we shared together, because they go by so fast. But even today, I want her to aspire to her dreams and to help her achieve her dreams. I know you do too. Our kids do sometimes make wrong decisions in life. And people sometimes come to me and say, "What do I do?" I think if the foundation has always been love, then we pour that concept of God into them of love. And I recall the story of Alice Cooper when I was growing up. Any of you know Alice Cooper? I want to close with this, that Alice Cooper was one of the darkest individuals I could think of. You know, his music was kind of dark and he did crazy things on stage. He was just wild. And, like 3 drummers on the stage with huge sets of drums. And it was just crazy. And so anyway, at one point, I heard that Alice Cooper had said that he had become a Christian. Well, you know, that's probably a stunt. You know, 6 months from now, that's just going to go by the wayside. He's going to come out and make fun of the event. But he didn't. In fact, he said that becoming a Christian was the most radical thing that he ever did. And that to this day, he's a Christian. His life has changed. Now, if you know the story of Alice Cooper, you know that his father was a pastor. And so he rebelled from his pastor, kind of like he calls himself a prodigal son, literally the story in the New Testament that Jesus shares that I think is probably the most fundamental story that characterizes the entire Bible is the story of the prodigal son. And so he said, "I ran away. I did all the things that were wrong and bad. But there was a point in my life, like the prodigal son, where I was away and I didn't have anything and I wanted to come back home to God and to my family, and God welcomed me with open arms and my father welcomed me with open arms." And he started a camp for wayward teens, this rock and roll, and he has a car auction once a year that supports that, and has a radio show where he sort of slips in some religious stuff along the way. But he came back. And I think sometimes our kids go off and it's like a rubber band. And so if we let them go and become independent, they stretch it out. Maybe they go the wrong way. But if we've loved them, then sooner or later they will come back. And so it is with God's fundamental story of grace and love to us that God is always welcoming. And our kids learn that from us, that we first and last love them. I know that parenting is challenging. I'm still in the midst of it. I have lots of shortcomings. But you know, our responsibility as parents is sacred ground. And it's one of the greatest things that we can do in life, and to instill the joy of living and the joy of faith, of loving and serving God and our neighbor, is one of the most important things in all of life. Will you join me in prayer? Lord, we do face some challenges in life, and parenting is one of the greatest challenges, but also one of the greatest joys in all of life. So Lord, help us as we go through the challenges and the joys of parenthood to lean on you and to share some wisdom that we have with each other along the road of life. More than anything else, help us to pour our love into our kids and help us to tell them about your love so they will grow in your love and learn to love and serve you and neighbor. We pray this in Christ's name, and all God's people said, Amen.